The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
the beast.
We're told in the Book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan. Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
Harlan Ellison. That's the name of the author I couldn't remember on Friday. Welcome, November 8th, 2010. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, and I will take unremembered sci-fi authors for 500, Alex.
Yes, the short story, one of the most disturbing things I've ever read, I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream.
I love Harlan Ellison. He wrote Shatterday, one of my favorite sci-fi short stories.
Yeah, a brilliant writer, and boy, post-apocalyptic mayhem in that particular short story, which seemed appropriate to the conversation we were having, which was about creating a super intelligence and then just hoping that it turns out to be moral and good, which is sort of the hope that singularitans. What would you call people believing in the singularity as their means of apotheosis or salvation? Really
wrong.
Besides wrong, if we had to give them a name, singularitans. Anyway, singularitans are kind of hoping that when they create this super intelligence, which is a key part of their belief toward uploading their consciousnesses into the afterlife, that it turns out to be a good thing. And that ain't necessarily so. So anyway, a new week and lots of stuff to talk about. There was
don't ask me. My blood sugar's still low. I'm just Lord. What? I let it go too low this afternoon.
Yeah,
came home and ate something, and it still hasn't come back up.
Well,
I'm just sort of what?
Jump in and sort of hope that sort of kickstarts things. The Friday night, View from the Bunker was a very disturbing interview because the Franklin scandal, the topic of the discussion, is one of the most disturbing episodes in American history. And Nick Bryant, who wrote the book, The Franklin Scandal, did a very good job of explaining concisely what the Franklin scandal was. Essentially, it was an organized pedophile ring in the mid-'80s, early to mid-'80s, based in Omaha that essentially plundered Boys Town and took advantage of orphaned boys and girls and used them as commodities for rich and powerful men and women. Predominantly men, not just in Omaha, but in Washington, D.C. It is one of the most gruesome and horrific events in American history, and most of us have never heard of it. If anything, I think the interview undersold, underplayed the horror. When you read the accounts of the children who were forced to participate in things that I really don't want to describe, really disturbing. We'll have a follow-up conversation with that. In fact, I've just exchanged emails just before the show with William H. Kennedy, the author of Lucifer's Lodge, which is an account of some of the pedophilia that's taken place inside the Roman Catholic Church. He will follow up on that in a couple of weeks because there were some elements of that case that dragged into, well, the last 5 years with one boy who went missing and some speculation which proved unfounded that a gentleman who turned up unexpectedly at a White House press conference as a reporter for a blog site might have been this missing boy. Anyway, we'll talk about that later.
Jeff Gannon.
Right.
This is really, really disturbing, and I know that many of our listeners have, if you've listened to the interview, then you're probably sitting there going, yes, yes, that really, really was an awful thing to talk about and to hear about. But the truth is that if you think about God Almighty and how He views us,
right,
we think we are so righteous.
Mm-hmm.
Well, our righteousness is like filthy rags,
right,
in comparison to the snow-white garments that we obtain through Jesus Christ Almighty. So whenever we talk about these things, and PID radio, of course, PID stands for Peering Into Darkness. So we take a look all the time at these really, the dregs of human society, the lowest common denominators, those things that you and I, Mr. and Mrs., you know, civilized American citizen or civilized citizen of the world, we would take a look at these and go, oh, that's awful. Oh, you know, but I could never imagine myself going there. Well, it doesn't matter. As far as God's concerned, we're just as bad.
They're right. It's not we're not graded on a curve on our righteousness. It's pass fail, mm-hmm. and all of us fail. There is none righteous, no, not one.
Now, that is not to say it's pass fail with regard to where you spend eternity.
That's correct.
That is not to say that God has not prepared rewards mm-hmm. and appropriate punishments
mm-hmm.
for those people who either work well with the gifts we're given. There are rewards for the righteous. There's no doubt about that. The Bema seat of Christ, the judgment seat of Christ. Then there is the great white throne judgment.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to be there for that one. Not on the judging end of it. You don't want to be there when he's saying, why should I let you into heaven? Mm-hmm. Your name is not written down in this book of life.
That's right.
Now let's talk about what you have not done and what you have done.
Mm-hmm.
That is not going to be a pretty picture. So I do believe that even though you're right, it's pass fail. You either get into heaven with eternity or you don't. You're either saved or you're not.
Yeah. But you're right. There are judgments and appropriate rewards and punishments handed out after. I would like to think, and I'm glad I don't have this responsibility, but I would like to think that there are special punishments for those who rip away the innocence of children.
Mm-hmm.
And today, in fact, that's one of the reasons, as you might recall, in the interview that I did with our pastor and his wife, Reverend Bob Land and Amy Land,
mm-hmm.
who are in the process now, thankfully, of proceeding with...
Praise God.
Yes, with the...
For miracles.
It truly is a miracle, and we won't go into details, but... A miracle has happened, and they are proceeding and will travel to Ukraine probably within the next month to bring home three precious special needs children, age 5 and 6, to here in little Shelbyville, Indiana. And one of the reasons that Amy is so passionate about wanting to do this is because of the way orphans are treated in Eastern Europe. They are lower on the social status, apparently, which makes it difficult to find a job. They're essentially turned out of the system at age 16 to fend for themselves, which means many children in desperation turn to prostitution, drugs, and other things just to survive and to numb the pain of their survival. So these children will be spared that through the love that they will receive here and the church family that will welcome them, I know,
mm-hmm.
Which is why we are so blessed to be a part of this particular church. But Amy, this afternoon, sent me an email, news story that is breaking this afternoon, November 8th, 2010, of a three-day roundup, essentially, coordinated by the FBI and local law enforcement of hundreds of people and nearly 70 children who have been rescued from prostitution in the United States today. This announced by the FBI and the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. This is a press release that's been released by a number of the FBI, Justice Department, and the NCMEC. There were 40 cities that were raided over the last 3 days. This weekend and then concluding today, some 884 people in all arrested, including these 69 juveniles who will... they'll be back in the system,
mm-hmm.
but at least they'll be off the streets. And 99 pimps, people who were selling these children as commodities to buyers all across the United States.
You know, I just pray that those pimps get some kind of real sentence, mm-hmm. and that's just a slap on the wrist.
Yeah. Since the news is just coming out, we've not had an opportunity. And a lot of the stories, if you do a quick Google search for this particular story, this was called Operation Cross Country 5, which sadly means there have been four of these prior to this.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find a lot of the stories are coming out with a local angle, which is good news reporting, but it's kind of hard to get a national picture as to whether you know, these pimps were coordinated nationally, if these were all regional groups. And there's a story from Minneapolis as part of this, that the traffickers in the Twin Cities in Minnesota were Somali, and they were running rings in three states. Somali gangs in Minneapolis running sex trafficking rings involving children in Minnesota, in Nashville, Tennessee, and Columbus, Ohio. 29 people arrested in conjunction with those operations as part of this larger Operation Cross Country 5. So, but again, 69 children rescued as part of this. So we're thankful for that today. Don't know any more details about this and whether any names will come out as far as the people who are connected with this. It seems that most of the time when you hear stories in the news about people who are prosecuted and actually sent to jail for child prostitution, they're usually nobodies.
Yeah.
I mean, relatively
speaking,
they're usually
nobodies.
They're way
down the pyramid.
Right. And that was one of the most disturbing aspects of the Franklin scandal, is that the people involved were very prominent, and yet nobody went to prison for this, the child prostitution aspect of the Franklin scandal. Lawrence E. King served time for plundering the credit union of $40 million or thereabouts, but he'd never served a day for what he was alleged to have done to the kids. So we shall see. Anyway, that is a breaking news item today, and we'll kind of follow this because this relates to the conversation Friday with Nick Bryant, who made the very disturbing point as we concluded our discussion that in his research about the Franklin scandal, he's come across evidence that suggests very strongly that there are other Franklins taking place inside the United States and around the world, even as we speak. So,
well, my story is not nearly as dark.
I feel like I need a shower right now.
You don't want to shower with this story. Trust me on this one. In South Africa, there are people who would like to pay you to pee.
Really?
That's right. Get paid to pee. That's the deal offer in the South African city of Durban, where the city is, or maybe it's Durban, don't know which one it is, sorry about that, where the city is looking to buy liquid waste to encourage residents to use dry toilets. They apparently want to install 20-liter containers on 500 of the toilets to capture urine, which is rich in nitrates, phosphorus, and potassium, and they say can be turned into fertilizer. It just seems to me like there are easier ways to get the nutrients for fertilizer.
Yeah, I suppose.
South Africa must have lots of animals that they could work with. But going around and collecting human urine.
Yeah, which is essentially a toxic waste.
Well, they may not be taking as many drugs there as we are here.
Well, yeah, that's true.
But I read that and I thought, are they really making – there are other ways to make fertilizer. You don't need to collect pee. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. Could it be there's something else they're planning on doing with his urine?
Well, I don't know. What good is
it? I don't know unless you – I don't know.
That's a bizarre story. And speaking of bizarre stories involving human urine –
Let's continue this stream.
According to The Guardian in the UK.
Sam says he gets yelled at when he talks about things like this.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, those spots on the carpeting in the dining room occasionally are just there to help us to, you know, make it easier for us to collect
his
valuable fertilizer. You know,
just wring out the carpet,
pre-processed fertilizer. That's all it is. In the UK, developers are actually working on an app for your smartphone that would allow you to pee under your phone and determine if you have a sexually transmitted disease.
If you're in South Africa, you can get paid to pee on your phone.
It's not quite the way the story is written, but it sure makes for an interesting lead. You don't actually pee into the cell phone. 4 million pounds, which is roughly $6 million, I think, last time I checked exchange rates, $6 million, been invested in the UK Clinical Research Collaboration, which is creating a smartphone app that would allow you to, well, put urine or saliva, so you don't actually have to pee on this chip. You can actually just spit on the chip instead. You put it onto a computer chip the size of a USB, well, it says USB chip. I mean, what is a USB chip? They mean probably a dongle or a thumb drive.
Who in their right mind wants to pee on a chip?
It's a waste.
They're pretty expensive.
Yeah. Anyway, you put...
This app is not cheap.
No. You would put a bodily fluid on this chip, plug it into your phone or your computer, and then it would give you a diagnosis within minutes. And this is actually a sad... I mean, it's a... We're laughing, but it's actually a sad state on human society when we're at a point now where we're trying to find a way to diagnose STDs through the USB port
on your laptop. Well, let me just make this observation. This is going through your smartphone.
Or your laptop or netbook.
Which has GPS capability and all your information on it.
Oh, yeah, and your urine information too, apparently.
Exactly.
Yeah. But you're right. That I hadn't even thought about that, because if you plug this into the side of your phone, which is GPS enabled and the authorities can mm-hmm. access it at any given time, are they going to use this then to start tracking people, literally tracking people who have an STD? Oh, we got a positive. I mean, and not just your phone, but your laptop, too. I mean,
but here's another thing. Let's say you've got the writer's mind. So let's say you've got this app on your smartphone, and your girlfriend mm-hmm. decides she's really cheesed at you, and she's got a friend who she knows has
an STD.
An STD.
Uh-huh.
And she has this guy pee on the chip,
uh-huh.
and she steals your phone while uh-huh. you're sleeping.
Plugs it in,
and the next thing you know, someone's knocking at your door. Hello, Mr. So-and-so. I see that...
I see that you're pregnant. No,
gonorrhea.
But, yeah, that is, interesting thought, but not outside the limits of the technology.
No, it isn't. Well, we're getting to that age, people. I'm getting to that age anyway. Well, let's see what else is going on in the world. You know, honey, here's something. I wasn't aware that... Nicaragua and Costa Rica mm-hmm. have been disputing their boundary for a couple of hundred years.
I didn't know they were that old.
Well, in mid-19th century, the boundary dispute was finally settled, and it was essentially put into stone with a map, and it was Grover Cleveland, good old Grover mm-hmm. Cleveland, who went down there and negotiated all of this, took care of it for the United States. And here's what happened today. And this is why I mentioned this.
And what did we get out of this deal?
Bupkis.
Yeah. No, I'll bet we did get something. Anyway.
I bet we did too. Today, well, actually it was Friday, that Nicaragua, who has a wonderful army, decided to camp on the wrong side of the border.
Uh-huh.
And remove the Costa Rican flag and plant the Nicaraguan flag. Uh-huh. In other words, we own this now.
Yeah.
Because we say so. And Costa Rica, understandably, was cheesed. Well, they don't have an army, really.
That's
so
right.
They couldn't really do too much about it. So they appealed to the UN. And it all turned out, Nicaragua says, Moo-moo, our bad. Mm-hmm. We totally thought we were in the right because we were just looking at Google Maps. Google Maps shows our boundary over here.
Right. And it's interesting because and we've got this article linked at instapaper.com. Look for the PID Radio collection of stories at instapaper.com. There's a map showing the difference between the Google Map boundary and the map that you find at Bing.com, which mm-hmm. is the Microsoft map. And
exactly.
Yeah.
Bing is correct. Google is wrong. Here's the interesting part. Google Maps gets their data from the U.S. Department of State.
Oops. Now, this is really interesting. Does somebody want to embarrass?
Who benefits?
That's a really good question.
Why would we want No. Would we care?
That's a really good question. Well, I mean, this is serious enough that the Secretary General of the Organization of American States has intervened, and he will be down there. He's supposed to announce the results of his negotiations tomorrow. That's November 9th. And this is interesting. Google geopolicy analyst Charlie Hale confirmed the error which misplaced the border. Google has a geopolicy analyst?
You know, Google is just essentially taking over. You do know that.
Well, sure. I mean, their
Google
Earth. Yeah, we totally love your browser.
We love your show.
The Google Earth software that they use that, you know, we can use to look down on just about any place on planet Earth. Actually, they make a high-res version that they sell to other governments.
You know, yes.
We can't look at it, but they sell it to other governments.
In fact, they can watch Sam peeing in the side yard, and, you know, they probably are paying him for it.
So there's...
He's been peeing on your smartphone, by the way. I just want to let you know.
That explains the difficulty in reception I have. Yeah. So there's that. Mount Merapi continues to grumble and rumble. As we mentioned Friday, the potential there is immense if those German geologists are correct in the size of the magma underneath the dome there.
I want to bring up something that you and I were talking about before we started doing this show tonight, and it was the Vatican warns of this Opus Angelorum.
I was essentially just vamping while I looked for that article here.
What's it? Instapaper.
It is right
there on the top.
And this was something, again, we just tumbled to just before the show tonight, reported by the BBC a couple of days ago. The Vatican has sent out a warning throughout the church to be wary of a group called Opus Angelorum, which means the work of angels. This is a group that was founded by an Austrian housewife back in 1970, or died in 1978, rather. The woman whose name was Gabrielle Bitterlich, she claims to have identified the angels and demons who are battling for the control of our souls. She said she was in contact with an archangel who gave her the names of over 200 angels and demons, hundreds of angels and demons, I should say. And the group, which she founded, which is active mostly in German-speaking countries, German-speaking areas of Europe, Brazil, and India, claims that...
Not Costa Rica, though.
No. Has spread, attracted followers among the priesthood and nuns. They teach that women who've had abortions are possessed by the devil.
Mm-hmm.
And they attracted enough attention from the Vatican so that the Vatican ordered an investigation. And back in 1992, the Vatican sent a letter to this group saying that we will give you acknowledgement if you will drop some of your more radical beliefs and follow the appropriate church-approved procedures for recognition. Members were not to make use, as part of this agreement, members were not to make use of the names of angels derived from the so-called revelations of Mrs. Bitterlich, and they were not to teach, spread, or make use of theories originating from these revelations. Well, apparently, some of the priests involved in this sect now are rebelling against this and want to take this group back to what they called the original Opus Angelorum. So, the Vatican is...
So there's infighting within the sect.
It would seem. Several members of the sect, including some priests, quote now, this is quoting the letter from the Vatican, have not accepted the norms given by the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith and seek to restore what, according to them, would be the authentic Opus Angelorum. The congregation has learned that very discreet propaganda in favor of this wayward movement, which is outside of any ecclesiastical control, they're off the ranch, they're loose cannons, is taking place, aimed at presenting it as if it were in full communion with the Catholic Church. So it is a group that apparently Rome has distance itself from because it is basing its doctrines on private revelation given to this this Austrian woman, who again passed away in 1978.
That was a long time ago.
It was, and I don't know how big this group is, to be honest with you, but it must be of some concern to the Vatican if they've taken the step of warning its bishops around the globe to be on the lookout for this sect.
Well, if I'm reading the article correctly, it looks like one of the problems is that this group has been presenting itself as, you know, essentially a part of the bigger Catholic Church somehow, mm-hmm. that the Vatican has condoned what they do.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is not true.
Right.
This also, by the way, and it's mentioned in the article, has nothing to do with Dan Brown's novel.
Angels and Demons, right. But you can find their website at opusangelorum.org. That's OPUSANGELORUM, opusangelorum.org. And it's in English and Spanish and Dutch and Portuguese. And it, it's trademarked. Opus Angelorum, Opus Sanctorum Angelorum, the work of the holy angels.
Patent pending.
But the thing is, they're praying to angels. Okay, that's part of the group's teachings, which is blatantly.
We are commanded not to do that.
Exactly right.
Unfallen angels will tell you, do not worship me, worship God.
And in the Old Testament, God is very clear in his instructions not to contact the spirit realm.
Mm-hmm.
So this group is way, way off the reservation. Mm-hmm. They believe that they need to pray to angels to intervene and fight the demons that are trying to, you know, wrestle for our souls. And mm-hmm. That is not how we engage in spiritual warfare.
Exactly. Now, we do believe, Derek and I do believe in spiritual warfare.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't pray to the angels, even God's holy angels.
Absolutely not.
You don't pray to them. I'm
no,
sorry.
Absolutely not.
Only pray to God Almighty.
Right.
Well, that being said, if you're worried about someone doing things to your smartphone that you would rather they not do,
yeah,
then perhaps you might want to purchase, rather expensively, but you might want to purchase a personal recreation drone. That's right. It's not just for police officers now. Or the CIA. Or for armies, for that matter. You can now purchase your own personal drone, which is a smaller private version of the infamous Predator drone. It has a camera on it. It will hover. It will go into tight spaces, and you got a wonderful set of little glasses you put on your face, and you can see everything it sees.
Hmm. So if you're, say, a paparazzi and you want to get that first picture of, what's her name? The girl who went into prison and rehab and
girl.
Yeah, the latest, you know, celebrity rehabber coming out of rehab. Your little drone can kind of hover over the.
Or if you want to get Lady Gaga and you want to gag.
There you go. This is this. Yeah. What's really interesting, though, is that there are. In engineering colleges around the United States that are having their students build things like this for mm-hmm. senior projects to try to come up with better
yes,
and faster ones.
Because DARPA constantly wants better ones.
Yeah.
They want to make them smaller and smaller. Now, we have said many, mm-hmm. many times, whatever you see in the news, take that back about 10 or 20 years
mm-hmm.
and understand that what is truly available in the black market and to those with the money has to be better than this.
Yeah.
So much, much smaller. So the next time you see a really large mosquito.
Beware. It could be the Hunter Seeker from Frank Herbert's Dune.
It could.
Oh, man. Well, and just remember that ultimately.
I have one more thing to say.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
One more thing to say, and that was that if you didn't catch it, the Kenyan representative in India, welcoming Obama to mm-hmm. India, referred to him as a fellow Kenyan. So what does that mean? Don't know. May mean he just, okay, you're related to people from Kenya in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Or he may have meant more. Because as Jerome Corsi has been finding, the people that live in Kenya and are part of that family claim he was born there.
Yeah. Well, it.
I just had to throw that one in.
Yeah, it won't come to anything because the guys who paid for the campaign won't let it.
Of course,
I'm sure,
it won't come to anything.
Well, we'll follow these and many other stories tomorrow, God willing. Until then, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I am Sharon Gilbert. Bye, bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out of here.